Shitty Scotch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Robert Fury, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Yes, we have Robert Fury back, or as I like to now call you, I'm giving you a new nickname now.
I'm excited.
And it's Der Fury.
Der Fury.
Der Fury. I'm sure it'll stick, and you can wear it with pride.
I'm going to roll with it. Get it tattooed across my chest.
That's right, and you can, you know, you can do other tattoos for when you go to prison.
with a hot needle dipped in ballpoint pen ink.
Yes.
I'm very familiar with prison tattoos.
The good way to do it. The clean, effective, completely hygienic way of getting a tattoo. Anyways, Fury, you haven't been... You were on the show back in October, I believe, because we were talking about The Thing, or Der Thing.
We did talk about Der Thing, and I dare liked it.
You know, and then I saw it, and I actually liked it, too. I mean, it was funny, because being in this world of movie reviewers and knowing different critics and that sort of thing, and or just people... I don't know if you... Do you fancy yourself a critic, or are you a guy who writes about movies? Because I know some people like to draw that line.
When I talk out loud, I generally call myself an entertainment writer, just because 95% of what I write are not film reviews, but I do occasionally review them. So sometimes, I'm a critic because, like, you know, I critique movies.
Yeah.
So I go either way. I don't get sensitive about it.
You don't have a badge. You're not like one of those people who are, you know, like, I remember back in about 10 years ago, about 10 years ago when I used to do independent film, and there are people who'd be like, I'm a filmmaker because I shoot on film and you shoot on video. And I'm like, are you going to tell like George Lucas that he's not a filmmaker?
Bad example, because he's a poop maker.
Well, okay, you may not like George Lucas, but you have to admit that
no
one's denying the fact that his major motion pictures were in fact films.
Yeah, I mean, that's a semantics issue, and people who fall back on semantics are usually just jerks. So
yeah. So but yeah, I what's interesting with in the critical world, of all the people that, you know, in this business, every now and then, you know, you disagree with stuff, and you find a movie that you like that nobody else liked, or that you hated, and everyone, like, I didn't like Bridesmaids particularly. And every now and then, it's kind of like you have that little, you find somebody and they agree with you, and you're just like, yes, we start this little club of we didn't like Bridesmaids. And everyone was really down on The Thing prequel.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely a prequel. But after hearing what you had to say about it, and when I went and saw it, I'm like, you know, Der Fury was spot on with that one. You were dead on with that, because I agree with you. You know, it wasn't as good as the original, or not the original, but the 82 version.
Yeah,
but it was. I found some things I really enjoyed about it.
Yeah, it's an enjoyable film. The John Carpenter film is one of my favorites of all time. Like top five movies, regardless of genre. And so I hold it on a pedestal. And other people come in, they're like, well, that's just poopy, man. That prequel. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. I like both of them. It's not as good, and they use too much CGI, but still, I had fun. I like to live in that world. And I'm with you on Bridesmaids, by the way. I give that solid C+ material. I didn't care. I laughed a few times. I like the end when they're all singing.
Yeah. But, well, that's because you're just a Wilson Phillips fan.
I am a huge Wilson Phillips fan.
You were probably standing up in the audience, dancing and singing with Maya Rudolph.
I was, in front of all the other press people. I'm like, Then I go see it again in the theaters. I just snuck in at the last 10-minute mark just to catch that one more time.
Yeah, why watch Sit Through the Rest when you can dance like Wilson Phillips?
I know. It's pretty laid-back dancing as far as dancing goes. You just sort of snap your fingers.
Dancing is sort of like just sort of shifting in your seat while you're eating popcorn kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm just nodding my head just a little bit. Make sure no one's watching.
Mm-hmm. anyways, let's move on. Thanks for having coming back on the show, Robert. It's always good to have the old FSR gang on the show now and then.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get through a couple paperwork items. First, if you want to reach us, you can go to fatguysofthemovies.com. There you have all of our cool stuff. And we just did a Fat Guy Second Reel podcast about how much found footage is terrible, and it just needs to be lost again. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys of the Movies, or search Fat Guys Network. I imagine if you searched Kevin Carr, it might show up as well, but... there's apparently an Irish fiddler out there, and he might have stuff on iTunes. So I'm not the really old guy with the beard. I'm just the middle-aged guy with the goatee beard. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and like us, because that's what we like. And you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We have an email today that we're going to read on the show. You can also leave us a voicemail if you want to go to the old-fashioned way. It's 740-205-6456. And Robert, since you've been on the show before, and we kind of talked a little bit about that, but tell us what you do and how you're involved in Film School Rejects and why you're not in jail yet and all that good stuff.
Well, I'm the editor-at-large at Film School Rejects, which means I get to make up different columns and features we do. I write Boiling Point every Monday, and I cover a lot of horror movies. I live in Los Angeles, so I also cover a lot of the junkets when we do them. And I'm just not in jail yet because my family posted bail, and we're going to hope for the best when the verdict comes in.
They haven't caught me yet. Acquitted. There we go.
I'm not in jail because I'm slippery, dude. I'm real slippery.
Well, and we're doing a you talk about making stuff up. There's actually a fun feature that's going on all year that I've written a couple of them, and I've got a couple more to do. It's the Apocalypse Soon feature, which I real briefly explain that, because I think it's a neat concept. And people don't quite get it when they first see it, but
yeah, I had the idea that, you know, I didn't have the idea. The Mayans had the idea that the world is going to end on December 21st.
Which is my anniversary, by the way.
Oh, well, at least you don't have to buy a gift this year.
I know, I'm hedging my bets.
Yeah, that's a risky gamble. But yeah, so I figured, you know, people are going to do end of the world stuff. And I was like, well, why not do it all year and think, like, if you're going to die in about 50 weeks. So yeah. Why not watch a movie a week that, you know, either makes you feel good or teaches you a lesson about life or teaches you how to survive on the off chance that the world burns and you don't. Yeah. So, you know, we got a lot of apocalyptic movies like Road Warrior, and then we have some feel-good movies like Love Actually. So, because, I mean, if you're going to die, you might as well die with a smile on your face.
That's what I always say.
So there'll be a lot of porn close to the end, probably.
it'll be a lot of that. Just at least that's what we'll be watching, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways, speaking of pornography, that isn't exactly what we're going to talk about next. Let's hit the first film real quick, and that is Casa de Mi Padre. And in the description, which I believe I took right from their website, is Muchos Tacos, Tequila es Esperanza de los Locos with Will Ferrell.
The biggest international motion picture of all time.
Mi mujer, señorita López, tiene que amar a la tierra como yo la amo.
Is coming to America. Gael Garcia Bernal, Diego Luna, Genesis Rodriguez, and introducing Will Ferrell.
Yo soy Armando Álvarez.
I don't speak Spanish.
I know
so
the taco part. I like tacos. I do like tacos. I know the rest of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got 30 seconds. It's going to be a preamp to suck because they didn't screen it for us, but I'll be checking it out. But let's talk a little more about tacos really quick.
All right. I'm always a fan of tacos.
I'm going to lead into this, and then we're going to talk a little bit about this on the break. Let's forget about Casa de Mi Padre, and we'll talk a little bit about the Dorito Los Tacos Locos from Taco Bell, whether it's a good idea or not. This is the kind of thing that Americans want to know, and people from other countries who listen to the show. But we'll be back when we come back from the break. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are talking about, not about Will Ferrell and his Spanish grindhouse Mexican-ish movie, which I do want to see. I think it's going to be, I think it has the potential to be very funny. It also has the potential to be like semi-pro in Spanish. So,
yeah, it's a risky proposition. Is the whole movie in Spanish?
That's how it plays to me.
Yeah, so.
You're not into reading subtitles?
I don't mind subtitles when it makes sense, but I feel like a Will Ferrell movie doesn't make that much sense to do it. You're just doing it to be weird.
Yeah. Well, they're tipping their hat at the Spanish grindhouse movies. So I don't know. We'll see. I've heard some interesting buzz about it because they showed it at South by Southwest, and I know they've had some early screenings, just not in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I'm from. So, but let's talk about the more interesting topic, Doritos, Tacos Locos from Taco Bell. You had mentioned off the air to me that you actually tried those. What did you think of them?
You know, initially I had really high hopes for it because I'm a big fan of Doritos, and that first bite didn't blow me away, but each subsequent bite was better. So, like... Because, like, when I buy Doritos, I normally go for the spicier nacho. So I'm when I think of Doritos, okay. I think of that spicier flavor. And these are
the red bag, yeah, not the orange.
This is the regular orange bag. So it's a much milder flavor than I was expecting. But then a couple bites into it, I was really digging it. I ate two of them, and I was pleased. I'll eat them again, definitely.
Yeah, it was weird. With me, it was like, it's sort of like that Two Great Taste, the Taste Great Together sort of ad for Reese's Peanut Butter Cup back in the 70s. Not that you remember. You weren't even born in the 70s.
But I'm from Hershey, Pennsylvania, so I know all about Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and their advertising history.
Rock on. but that's what it was. It's like I like the taco, and I like the Doritos. I like Doritos. And it's an intriguing thing. You're right. It's not bad. It's not delicious. But see, I'm sort of like, I'm old school when it comes to the Taco Bell tacos. I mean, I've had the Volcano tacos, and those are good, and I like spicy, but they were just... It's just go back to the way God intended us to eat tacos.
See, I'm not a huge Taco Bell guy, but I like the Volcano Burrito, which I think sort of, it has like crunchy like chip things almost already in it. Sort of like Fritos are almost in it.
Yeah.
And then so I'm all for experimenting, and I really like Doritos, and I normally don't buy the regular tacos, so I'm not in love with the regular tacos. So going nacho cheesy on the taco shell seemed like a good idea to me. And I really liked it towards the end after the meat juices had sort of soaked into it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That was even better. So you might actually just want to buy them, keep them warm, but let them sit for a couple minutes. Let them marinate. Let them marinate.
Well, what's funny about it is because it's the if you haven't had it, the entire shell is, in fact, a giant Dorito.
They're not joking.
Dusted on both sides. It feels like a Dorito. It tastes like a Dorito. It's a lot of Dorito. I mean, that's probably the equivalent of about 8 chips in that one single shell.
If not a little more.
Yeah, so it is a huge infusion of Dorito. So it's neat, but it is sort of this weird thing where they took these two. And I said this to the manager when I was getting them. I said because he asked what I thought of them, and I'm like, well, I don't know if they're worth $1.29 each. But I said it is sort of like they took the two things that drunks will eat the most, and they merged them together to make the perfect drunk food. And he's like, well, we'll get that tested this weekend. Just sort of shaking his head. So, yeah. So I do give a kind of rocks to the Doritos Tacos Locos.
Definitely a thumbs up from me. I will have them again.
A orange dusted thumbs up.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the next movie. This one we have seen. Believe it or not, we've actually seen this movie. Next week I will have seen the movie. It's a weird time to actually have them screen all the movies for us. But this week we've got 21 Jump Street. Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum star as semi-youthful looking cops who go undercover at a high school to bust a drug ring.
We're reviving a canceled undercover program from the 80s.
Where do we report to?
Down on Jump Street. 21 Jump Street.
You are here because you some Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus looking mothers. You will be going in as undercover high school stoops. There's a new synthetic drug at Sagan High. The mission is find a supplier.
I think the dealers are the popular kids.
We should throw a party. That would be the quickest way to get in with them. I promise you we'll be super professional. All I do
is party. Robert Fury, Dare Fury, what do you have to say about 21 Jump Street?
It was good. It was an enjoyable film. I don't do accents very well.
Whoa, you're going full Borat on me almost.
They all come out the same. Like, to me, I sound like the world's greatest impersonator, but like when you listen to the recording, it's like, doo, doo, doo. But that's neither here nor there. I enjoyed the film, sir.
Yeah.
And speaking critically, I didn't think it was like amazing. Like, I had heard a lot of critics really like saying like this is the funniest movie of like the past couple years. And
yeah,
it's definitely enjoyable. There are some parts that I feel like the jokes feel like they're super old. Like you can even see it in the trailer, like Jonah Hill firing his gun into the air to celebrate. Like that just screams to me like the other guys starring, you know, Will Ferrell and
Will Ferrell from the
and Mark Wahlberg, yeah. So like, you know, there's some tired jokes in it, and I think Ice Cube does a pretty terrible job. But like overall, like the movie is endearing. Like you want it to be funny, you start enjoying it. It actually features Taco Bell in it.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's why I went to go do it. I seriously was a total slave to product placement because after I went to my screening, I went right to a Taco Bell.
Yeah, it's a funny joke too, you know, because like I brought tacos and it's the 12 Taco Bell deal. I really wish they sold 12 Doritos tacos in that box. I would totally buy that. But like you said, they're a little expensive. They're you know, they're $1.30 or whatever. That's a little too much for me.
You'd be like a drug addict. You'd be like doing the heroin hang there after you ate them, because you said you liked them the more and more you did. So it's one of those things. It's a positive reinforcement.
I'd be
thing.
Crunching the chip shell up and just snorting it, just snorting Doritos cheese.
Just like Mighty Mouse.
Yeah. It's a flower. It's not cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I have to say, kind of like the Dare thing, I think Dare 21 Jump Street. I agree a lot with what you said. I think it's there is a certain amount of recently there's been a lot of hyperbole by people in our industry, both up and down for everything. I mean, there are movies that come out that people are saying are the greatest movies they've seen and some of the worst movies. Like, for example, 21 Jump Street is the one that's getting over hyperbole. Oh my god, it's the funniest movie of the year. Easily funniest movie. Best cop, buddy cop movie since 48 Hours or since, you know, whatever. And I'm also, you know, you're seeing stuff like Ghost Rider, which was not a good movie, but people are over hyperboling down on that. Like, it's the worst movie they ever made. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of worse movies. And there are a lot of better movies than the movies we've seen recently. It's okay to be average or above average. I think 21 Jump Street is above average. Like, it's enjoyable. If you go to the theater, you're not going to want your money back, but you're not going to come out of there and get Channing Tatum's face tattooed on your chest.
If you already have it, like I do.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's why you what's see the point? It in the first place. I mean,
do you realize, though, what's terrifying is that this is going to be the year of Channing Tatum?
It feels like he's had, like, 2 years. Like, he is persistent.
This is his third movie this year. He was in Haywire. He was in The Vow, and he was in this. And I think this is going to do really, really well. The Vow's done way better than it ever had any business doing. And he's in the G.I. Joe movie coming out. So it's going to be the Channing Tatum, which is a depressing thought. But but I think he's funny in the movie. I actually think he works with what he does. And I think Jonah Hill works. Even skinny, scary-looking Jonah Hill works.
Yeah.
You're right. I think there's certain uneven parts. Now, I personally, I thought Ice Cube was hilarious because he just... dove right into the stereotype of the yelling, screaming. I mean, and that's all he was doing. And his lines were pretty funny. And so there's some funny moments in the movie, but what's funny is there are parts of the movie where it suddenly just sort of loses steam. And it loses steam in the weirdest times. It's sort of like Get Him to the Greek, where you have these scenes, if you remember the Jeffrey sequence and Get Him to the Greek, where it just loses focus and you're like, all this stuff's happening, but you just don't care. And that's kind of how I felt. Even like this, there's the big chase at the end. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of like, well, that was kind of a lame chase. I know what they were trying to do, but it just didn't quite work.
Yeah, it's got a funny joke in it, sort of. Like, because like in your head, you're like, this is a funny joke, but the way they're winking at you the whole time, they're like, check out how funny this thing we're doing is. It's like this gag that we've done it 3 times. It's really funny. And you're like, well, yeah, it would be funny if you weren't staring at me, winking, telling me that the joke is funny. Like, it's either funny or it's not. And there are moments like that when, like, they know what they're doing is funny, but they feel the urge to remind you that what they're doing is funny rather than playing. Like, there's no subtlety to the film at all.
Yeah, and that's a delicate balance. I mean, some people are comparing it to Hot Fuzz. Hot Fuzz is way better than this. But it's still, it's a funny movie. I laughed way more than I thought it would, because I thought the trailers made it look terrible.
Yeah.
But overall, it's a good movie. You know what, we got to go to a break. We got about 15 seconds left, but... when we come back from the grade, we'll give what's your official grade? Do you say, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
Yeah, I'll give it I'll be right there with you on the, I'll give it a B in the B area, kind of rocks.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm up there. I like it.
All right, cool. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We got Robert Fury. Dare Fury is with us. And we were talking about, actually on the break, we were talking about some, we should have taped that. Because we were going into way more detail than anyone wants to know about which porno stars to follow and how wrecked.
I feel like people follow a lot of porn stars on Twitter, and like they probably would have appreciated the in-depth insight into who and why, the pros and cons, which ones talk back to you, and which ones show you their boobies.
Well, and that's the thing, and that's what I guess that when it all boils down to this is if I've follow an adult film actress on, I say that to be respectful and polite. If I follow an adult film actress on Twitter, first of all, I'm not following because I want to know about their family life or their dog or their cats or their politics or what they're doing at the mall. I want to see titties.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of titties.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. If people follow me, they probably don't care about, what my dog's titties. Doing or my titties. Maybe they do. I'm not sure. If they do, they should tweet at me and I'll show them. I'll show my titties right now. But you follow people for the reason that they're famous. Porn stars are famous for getting railed. So I want to see you naked and tell me about your latest little behind the scenes action. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Now, because I actually follow that. I do that. I look at it like this. I comment about movies, and yeah, a lot of times on Twitter I'll be like, "Oh, my kids did this, or this happened, or I'm doing this at home," but that's just sort of an insight into my everyday life. That's not a big deal. 95% of what I tweet about is about movies or about entertainment of some sort. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody wants to hear what I have to say about politics. We got the Republican National race going on. No one wants to know my thoughts on this.
Yeah, I occasionally send some off-topic jokes out that are either, they're about politics or wearing socks with your sandals. If it's funny, people enjoy it. But I'm not going to sit there and tell you, the pros and cons of getting a Santorum from your partner.
Well, yeah. Well, you don't get it. You leave a Santorum. That's in the drain. Unless you get them, I don't know if you keep it and then you can give it to you, re-gift it.
I didn't know if you had to milk it or if it just was like naturally occurring. I'm not too up to date on the latest in anal sex techniques. Is it specifically gay or is it just any anal sex? I'm not sure.
Well, anal sex is gay or straight. I think it
can result in the Santorum.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to follow him on Twitter and see what he says about this.
He did have and the only time I'll mention stuff like even remotely regarding politics is like there was the time when and this always seems to be about Santorum because he's so out of touch with just general pop culture. He called one of his fundraisers conservative United Money Bomb, which stood for cum.
Yeah, I've seen some
and then he was going to like Cummings, Georgia once for like a rally, and he's like, I can't wait to come to Cummings, and we're just and I'm just like, oh really, you don't even have somebody like running your Twitter account saying don't do that.
Don't you have like a teenage son who can just be like, hey dad, wake up a second, man.
I used to work at a textbook company, and I kept telling the people, I said, you need to keep me around because I will find the things that are just really embarrassing that you write. And like one of them is saying that there was something in a textbook, and it was, I won't say, it was for a major, it was a major textbook company. And that we were writing this book for, and somebody's like, oh, and all these people were scared, and there was a huge evacuation. And I'm like, it makes it sound like they shit themselves. Can we change the wording of that?
I like it.
Yeah, just keep me around to say, hey, if it's coming out of your ass or your front, you might not want to say that, or maybe you do. Then go for it.
Sometimes things just got to leave the system.
Yeah, and when it comes to porno stars, you have to tweet out naked pictures of yourself. If you don't, I'm not following you, Alexis Texas. I'm talking to you. But yeah, go follow someone like Riley Steele or Courtney Combs with two M's and like 17 Z's, I think. So anyways, that's an insight into what Der Fury and I were talking about in the break.
Classy stuff.
But in a related topic, we were talking about tacos with Taco Bell's. Wait, oh, no, we
tacos
weren't.
Tacos are related to porn stars? Is that what we're... Is that,
well, there's a certain type of taco.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's the one that you don't want, the spicy taco.
Fish tacos? Wait, what?
What?
Channing Tatum?
You know what's funny? I had something brilliant to say about 21 Jump Street. Oh, I know one of the things I was going to say about 21 Jump Street is when they finally have the big party scene in that movie, it was funny, but it did sort of... It was after watching Project X a couple weeks ago, which is the worst... And this is not hyperbole. It's the worst fucking movie ever made in the history of cinema. after watching Project X and then seeing this party scene in there, it was just uncomfortable to watch because Project X was so awful. Uh-huh. And even though the party scene works in 21 Jump Street, it just felt so much like Project X because the writers from the same... I mean, I don't know if you could say he wrote Project X because that's a bold statement.
He sketched out an idea of a scenario.
Yeah, when they announce they're doing they're developing the script for Project X Part 2. I'm like, developing it? Can you really say that?
I've actually got a copy of it here with me. The kids throw a bigger party.
There you go. Yeah. That's right. Maybe they could go to Bangkok, and maybe they could all get raped in the face.
The kids travel to an exotic location where they throw a party while the parents are away.
Yeah.
Nailed it. But
you know what's great about 21 Jump Street? Have you seen the TV show?
I've seen a couple episodes. I'm not an expert on 21 Jump Street, but I got the in jokes.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is I mentioned this last episode. I even talked about this on the Golden Briefcase when I was on last week. Thanks to the Golden Briefcase guys, that was fun. But I never saw the show when it aired. I don't know why, because I was the perfect age. I was in high school. I was like 16, 17 when it came out. So I was the perfect age. I was the target market for this show. I just never ended up watching it. And I went back and I watched I rented the first disc from Netflix. And so they had like 7 episodes and I watched it. And as funny as 21 Jump Street is, they should have just taken the pilot for the series and just put it in theaters. Because that's way funnier.
So, it was a different time.
Yeah, it was an interesting show. It's a terrible show, but it was... What's neat about actually going back and watching it is there is a certain sort of, like, everyone looks at the retrospective with rose-colored glasses, and they're like, oh, you know, they're ruining it. You know, they're updating it. They shouldn't do it. They should leave it where it is. There was nothing untouchable about 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, there are some things that you can't get mad when they remake, you know, or they adapt or whatever. You just go with it. You don't really care that much.
Yeah. So, anyways, let's move on to box office and what happened this week. And there was the big winner was The Lorax again. I actually thought, I didn't think The Lorax was going to hold as well against John Carter, but John Carter, of course, didn't do as well. We'll actually talk a little bit more about the John Carter kerfuffle, we'll say, when we have a listener question to talk about. But it was Dr. Seuss's The Lorax at almost $39 million, John Carter at just over $30 million, and then you had Project X, Act of Valor. The really disappointing performances were Silent House and A Thousand Words, which were right in the middle of the sixes. I'm not surprised by either of them because I think Silent House had somewhat of a soft interest, and A Thousand Words were just fucking awful.
Yeah, I mean, A Thousand Words is a joke just seeing that it's an Eddie Murphy movie. I mean, like, no one wants to see this movie. He's not wearing a fat suit. It was filmed a couple of years ago. It's been sitting on a shelf. There's no interest in it. So I didn't even know it came out this weekend. That's how little interest there is in this movie.
What's so funny about A Thousand Words is there's jokes in there that they couldn't fix that were old 2008 jokes. There's so much stuff in there. Like, he has a joke where he's talking about how much this, because the whole thing is they're trying to woo this guru, which of course they're already kind of spinning off the love guru, which was dead and buried in 2008. And he says, well, this guy sells out stadiums. He sells more tickets than Hannah Montana. And I'm like, Hannah Montana?
Yeah.
Couldn't you have looped in something else? Couldn't you have, you know,
Justin Bieber?
Yeah,
I should have polished that. I should have been a writer on this movie.
You totally should have. And they had a scene. There was also a scene where he was doing his Michael Jackson impression, which was interesting because it was before Michael Jackson died.
Yeah.
And you sit there and be like, oh, yeah, he was still alive in that. So it is a it was a terrible movie. I went and saw it. But it's still better than Project X. anyways, what do you think is going to win this weekend? How do you think is going to do?
I think John Carter. 21? What's that? 21 Jump Street, I think, will come out on top. John Carter, I think, will hold fairly well because I think word of mouth on it is decent. So I would expect it to stay in the top three pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Maybe even bring in, you know, close to what it did. I don't see it falling off huge, but I think, you know, 21 Jump Street, women like Channing Tatum and dudes like dumb comedies, and 21 Jump Street is kind of a dumb comedy with Channing Tatum. So I think it's the movie you go see this weekend if you're looking to, you know, have a fun time at the movies.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a 40 to 50 million on that. And I think the Lorax will drop off. It'll have a nice, you know, modest less than 50% drop, so you're still gonna, it's still gonna be right around 20 million. I think you're right. I think John Carter's gonna hold better. I don't think it's gonna plummet. I don't think it's gonna have the 70% drop off. I think it's it'll probably be 40%. So it'll still be in the high teens.
Yeah, yeah.
So and then everything else is below it because Casa de la Madre or Padre is that I don't even know how many theaters that's opening, and it's not very many, and it's in Spanish.
Yeah.
It's opening in 350 theaters, which is about 1/10 of the number of 21 Jump Street, and the fact that it's in Spanish, and I think most mainstream audiences aren't even just going to get the joke.
Yeah.
So.
It's a tough sell, and you know, but that's what happens when you try to take like a single joke and make it the entire premise of your movie. Like a skit where Will Ferrell does this, that's probably funny for 4 minutes, but you want to do it for 90 minutes? I don't know. I've heard some good things about it, but not necessarily from people I trust their opinion. So I can't speak to its success or failures, but I think 21 Jump Street probably pretty soundly grabs this weekend.
Definitely. I think, you know, the one thing Casa de mi Padre has going for it is it's 84 minutes.
Yeah.
So
even people could see two movies. They could see 21 Jump Street and Casa de mi Padre at the same, you know, back to back and not feel too bad about it.
Exactly. So that's what I think is going to happen. Let's move on to that's our official, completely unscientific box office predictions. Let's go to listener feedback. Here's a question. This is from our good friend Thomas from Seattle. He says, can an actor like Taylor Kitsch rebound from a bomb like John Carter? Also, stories are emerging that director Andrew Stanton was given a blank check from Disney due to his success with Finding Nemo and WALL-E. Does this prove the point that a director is never well-served when surrounded by yes-men? Shades of George Lucas on the Star Wars prequels, by the way. Okay, first of all, there's two parts here, so we'll take them one as another. And you wrote actually a very... you know, level-headed, cogent piece on your boiling point where you're usually raging, but you were very, you kind of laid it out really nicely about John Carter. Is it a bomb? Is it not a bomb? First of all, let's address that before we even get to it. I wouldn't call John Carter a bomb.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not, if it is an explosive, it's not atomic. It's a firecracker.
Yeah. But there's different things you have in Hollywood. You have the huge successes. Avatar, there's no way to deny that it was a success. Then there's movies that are absolute utter fucking bombs, and movies like Cutthroat Island is a great example, where it cost $90 million, it made 10.
Yeah,
it didn't even come close to recouping that. Then you have you get into the level of disappointment territory, and that's, I think, when all said and done, you're going to see that's what John Carter is. It's a disappointment, and a lot of people have pointed out the international box. I think it's going to have much better legs internationally
than
in America. Now, so I don't think it's a bomb. It's a disappointment. It's not a franchise starter, but here's the thing with John Carter. I think for some reason, and there are some people who just likes to report when there's a bomb because they find it exciting. It gets people to click on their headlines. But I do think that certain people in the industry were out to get John Carter months ago. It doesn't hurt. I mean, it doesn't help having a large budget and not a big name behind it in terms of actors and that sort of thing. But when it came out, when it was leading up to coming out, and I said to myself, I'm like, this is never going to, it's never going to make enough money domestically to justify that budget.
Yeah.
That's been reported. You know, I mean, it's a fringe science fiction piece that's 100 years old. It's got no major stars. It's, I mean, if it doesn't have like a Will Smith in it or, you know, or like a, you know, it doesn't have a name that people will, you know, like a Tom Cruise or something like that. It doesn't have any sort of bankable name. It had Taylor Kitsch, which if you didn't watch Friday Night Lights, you don't know who the hell that guy is.
Yeah. Gambit from X-Men Origins, Wolverine.
Yeah, that's your big catch. And then on top of it, it's for all any of the problems it had, and I said this last week when I saw it, I'm like, all the problems it have is a result of the source material. Because the source material was 100 years old, and it was a very different way of telling a story back then. What it reminds me of is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah.
Where some dumbass executive's like, oh, it's a comic book property, and people love Michael Cera, and Edgar Wright's a popular director. Let's give him $60 million and make this movie. I'm like, well, wait, hold on a second. It's a popular comic book among people who know the comic book, but most people don't.
Yeah, it's not Spider-Man.
Yeah, and it's not a traditional hero. It's very it's very limited to sort of like that hipster geek culture, and that's it. So there's a lot of things that were going against Scott Pilgrim. But and while it wasn't, it didn't make money, it wasn't a utter bomb either. It at least made some money back. And I think that's ultimately where John Carter is.
Yeah, I mean, and with a movie like John Carter, you also can't discount like the long-term property value in that, you know, Disney markets the hell out of their stuff. So you're going to look at toys, and you're going to look at comics, and you're going to look at books for kids. And at the end of the day, this isn't ruining anyone's career, not by a long shot. I mean,
no.
It's a lesson that people should learn from, which I suppose we'll get to in the second part of the question. But yeah, John Carter, not a bomb.
Well, I also don't think, I question this $250 million budget as well. And throughout the weekend, if you watch it, like $250 million, it could be $350 million. They spent all this money on this marketing, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, before you know it, you add it all up and it's $500 million. And I'm like, Disney did not write a check for $500 million.
I mean, it's unfair as well to count the marketing budget against this movie. Because like, that's how you can tell people really want to pile onto it as a failure. Because yeah. Name another movie where people complain about the marketing budget. Like, you can hear about bad marketing, but you never hear about someone say, oh, yeah, they spent so much money to market it, so don't forget to count that. If you look at any big summer tentpole film, whether it's Transformers or Pirates of the Caribbean or these things...
Or Avengers coming up, yeah, which is from the same studio. Yeah,
they all have millions of dollars in advertising, and no one's counting that against them. You don't look at Superman Returns and say... Oh, well, that barely made any money, but don't forget the marketing budget, so it made even less. No, I mean, you're just playing the pile-on game, and sure, they spent a lot of money to market John Carter, and it didn't do well. But you know what? Marketing money is one of those tricky accounting areas in Hollywood where there is not a line item under John Carter that says marketing $100 million. There is a marketing slush fund.
Well, the way it works is Disney, for example, Disney, and all studios do this. Disney does not say, oh, let's advertise John Carter on this show, on this network. How much is that going to be? $5,000 for the spot. Okay, here's $5,000. I'm going to put this on. They buy in bulk. At the beginning of the year, quarterly, I don't know exactly how the accounting works, but they buy it and they say, we want X number of slots on your network in these shows, and whatever movie we're promoting, we're going to advertise it at the time. And so this is the only movie from Disney that's coming out. Guarantee you the same slots are going to be used in late April when they're really pushing the Avengers. And that's how they buy it. And then all they do is they just say, okay, well, then let's just attribute this to the budget. And your example of Superman Returns, which I think when you get – well, there's also the whole thing of the reported budget. Disney is in no – There is no fiduciary responsibility for Disney to disclose how much it cost to do John Carter. It could have cost $75 million, and they said, you know what? Let's say it's $250 million just so we can hide the money from this snafu we had on this reshoot on the Avengers or this or that or whatever. These numbers are not real numbers. They're just what's reported by the studio. And it's funny, if you looked at Box Office Mojo, which is where most people are getting that number, five, six weeks ago, there was no budget reported for John Carter. It was only leading up to it that Disney started releasing this $250 million budget, which I don't believe for a second.
Yeah, and so, you know, with something that has a long production history like John Carter that's been tossed around for years and years, there's just no reason for them to tell you the truth, and there's no reason for them to not hide some money in it too. Like, you know, if they want to write off at the end of the, like, if they think John Carter's not going to do well, it might make sense for them to say that it costs more than it did, and that way you hide some of your losses in this movie. So, like, you might have been taking losses the whole year, but then when you look at the books at the end of the year, you can say, oh yeah, John Carter lost some money on that one, because you knew you were going.
Well, it's also on a quarterly basis. It's also not a coincidence that John Carter comes out only a couple weeks before the end of the quarter, and that might be used for that.
Yeah, they're very intelligent, very highly paid people who are behind the numbers here, and we are not intelligent and we are not highly paid, and so
not
they
at all.
They've got this figured out way more than we do. But
yeah,
I mean, the point.
Well,
is,
like the example used with Superman Returns, that $360 million is the budget I heard. That includes like the payment that was given to Tim Burton, and the upfront fees to Tim Burton and Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage and costume tests.
Kevin Smith. All this stuff like back in the 90s. That gets rolled up in that they spent and it's gone. But it's getting attributed to this budget that they made in 2006.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just saying, I'm just correcting. John Carter's not going to be a bomb. It's not going to make the $600 million worldwide that it would need to clear that. But I don't think it needs to.
No, I mean, you know, it was they went for it and they didn't quite get it. So, I mean, I wouldn't even discount an eventual sequel with a lower budget, with different director, if the international, money comes in. You know, it's already made $100 million or $70 million internationally, and that's kind of a good haul for an international release. Like, predominantly, movies make a ton of money in the U.S., so when a movie has a good splash overseas, you can see a lot of income generated there. So it's not out of the question that they make another movie. Should you, bet your kids on it? Probably not. Yeah. Bet a couple of tacos on it? Sure, I'll bet a couple of tacos on it. A
couple Dorito cut tacos. Oh, well, and like I remember the movie 2012 made like 200 and some million domestic, $800 million worldwide. So, I mean, there are some movies that do very well. And John Carter might be poised to do that. Also, this is again why, this going ahead to this blank check that Stanton got, I don't think he got a blank check, because again, there's all the numbers weren't in place for this, and nobody gets a blank check in Hollywood. That's being reported that way. So let's go in particular about the first question. Can an actor like Taylor Kitsch rebound from this, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it won't hurt his career, because he is three movies in the pipeline already that he's going to come out in. So, like, he wasn't a huge name in it to begin with. So I feel like a lot of people didn't know who he was, and a lot of people don't care.
Still don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, when all said and done, he's got three more movies that he's already been paid for, so he's going to be on the big screen three more times. If any one of those does remotely good, like, he's fine. And, you know, he's coming from Friday Night Lights, which, like I said, I didn't watch it, so I barely knew who the guy was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his career hasn't really started, and it's definitely not ending. So,
no.
I
think you're right. He can totally rebound from this, because most people, first of all, anybody who saw John Carter, most of them wouldn't immediately say Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah.
They don't even know who the hell that is.
No.
And then the people who didn't see it don't know or don't care.
Truth.
And keep in mind that if you want to talk like a success of a movie, It all depends on the budget. And they say, oh, $30 million is a terrible start for John Carter. It's still more people than saw Chronicle.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just Chronicle cost $12 million. So it's a risk return type thing, but don't people tend to think, oh, well, this movie didn't do well for its budget and nobody saw it. Well, more people are going to end up seeing John Carter than these other movies that people think are more popular. Yeah, it's not that Chronicles that popular. Chronicles, it got a lot of buzz, but it's still, you know, in terms of actual ticket sales, it's not a huge seller. It's just
a good return on investment. Is exactly what it is. It's because you're surprised. You're like, wow, this movie we only spent $20 million. How'd we make $50 million on it?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you go and you look at the movies, like even Avatar and Pirates, which I come back to, and Transformers, which I come back to, they generate a lot of raw numbers in terms of money, but there's a lot of costs that they don't advertise about those as well. So most people in the business will tell you that tentpole movies are not what they make their money on theatrically. Like, when you put movies into theaters, it's sort of to get the brand out there. It's almost like movies, when they have huge budgets, are advertising for other things.
So,
I feel like, you know, do they wish John Carter made $500 million? Of course they do. Is anyone going to lose their job over this? Probably not. No. You know, so.
Now, the next part of the question is the part about a director being surrounded by yes men. You kind of throw Andrew Stanton under the bus in your article.
I did.
Do you want to expound on that?
Sure. You know, I just in reading about John Carter and the journey, it had been reported, and, you know, we can argue about the validity of it. Andrew Stanton hasn't commented on it. But there was a very clear line from Disney that came out that we weren't going to blame Andrew Stanton for the failure of this movie. And then that he was also in charge of marketing. In a degree, he's not out there making every decision, but
yeah,
he made choices about the music that was shown, which clips were shown, which images were used on billboards. And I think we can all agree that the marketing for John Carter failed and wasn't even all that exciting. Like, people are going into the movie and being like, wow, I like the movie more than I thought I would based off of the advertising.
Now, I'll give you that, but here's the other thing. When it comes to marketing, I always get irritated when people are like, well, they just didn't market that movie right. I don't think any amount of marketing would have saved... I don't think any amount of marketing would have resulted in a $100 million plus weekend for John Carter domestically.
No, I don't think so either, but it definitely would have done a little bit better. Yeah, I mean, you might draw more people in. You might get a better opening weekend. It might not change your bottom line. I think a movie's going to make what a movie's going to make.
Yeah.
Regardless of how you market it, for the most part. Like, people have to know what's in theaters, number one. People knew John Carter was in theaters. Yeah. Then you have to get them to want to see it. Not a lot of people wanted to see it, but enough of them went to see it that, you know, if it were good, more people would have heard that and gone to see it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was just an aspect of his thing, because apparently what they also said was that when Stanton needed help, he would go to his animation friends from Pixar. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that's, you know, he's a first-time live-action director. He shouldn't have been given a ton of freedom, and he should have been given, like, a really, really strong first assistant director to really guide him through, like, how you make a big live-action movie. Because this is not a good learning experience. Like, you can look at Brad Bird with Mission Impossible. Like, that's a tough movie to make, too. But it's not quite as crazy as having, you know, several hundred digital elements for someone who's never done this before. Like, this guy's used to sitting in front of a computer and telling other people what to make happen on a computer, and if it's wrong, you can control Z and undo it. In the real world, if you blow an effect, you've set yourself back several hours, and on a movie like this, several hours is tens of thousands of dollars. And so, like, I just think that it seemed like they did give him a little too much freedom, probably based on the fact that he's been hugely successful in animation. And I just think that, you know, like, there needed to be some checking of egos. Like, he should have asked for help from the right people, and he should have been given that help. Like, even if he doesn't want to ask for it, you put the people around him so he's surrounded by people that know exactly what to do.
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of culpability from Disney on that, in the sense that he was just sort of, I don't think he was left out to dry, but they didn't have as much oversight on him, and I'm reluctant to compare it to Brad Bird with Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol, simply because you're talking about an established franchise. You got a huge name in it even though he's been had a rocky past, we got Tom Cruise who sells internationally. There's a lot of that to it. And so he was working with a known quantity. So there was enough involvement. Because I guarantee you Brad Bird, even if they gave him a blank check and said, do whatever you want to, Tom Cruise would have stepped in and said, I'm going to do this.
Well, yeah, I totally so agree with that. And that sort of speaks to, like, they may have not have consciously surrounded Brad Bird with the type of people, but, like, you put Tom Cruise there, who's a producer on it, and yeah. You put Tom Cruise's, you know, he's probably bringing the same stunt people in, so he's bringing in a lot of people who know exactly what they're doing. And, you know, Brad Bird is sort of forced to listen to it, even if it's not what he wants to do. Whereas I feel like in John Carter, there's no option because they're like, you're in charge. Here you go. And like,
I think they just did it and it kind of probably steamrolled. I mean, from the very beginning, they should have said, well, you need with an untested quantity being the John Carter books that very few people have read or even are aware of. I think that at the very least they should have said, okay, we need to at least get a star power doesn't save a movie, but I think it could have helped.
Yeah.
You know, if they would have put now, see, but to see that, then it could have been also been disastrous. They could have been like, well, we want Taylor Lautner to play John Carter. And he's a terrible actor. And that would have been an awful, awful, awful decision.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think what we're seeing is that there should have been a better balancing in studio interest versus artistic interest. And, you know, they didn't ever quite get that level, and they sort of made a tilted movie that didn't do so hot.
I think, and so where Thomas asks about, you know, being surrounded by yes men, I don't think he was surrounded by yes men. I think he just wasn't given the guidance that they need. I think they looked at it and said, well, he's an experienced director, but you're right. He was first time doing live action in terms of casting, and it wasn't just make a cute robot or make a cute fish. It was, you suddenly have to make this character compelling, and you can't just go by the voice. You have to go by somebody who will be a draw. And I think there are certain elements to the blockbuster equations that were left out. So he may have been also he kind of was left out to dry. And I think that probably is why Disney has come out and said, well, we're not going to blame him, because I think if they did, well, there's a lot of politics going on there too, because Stanton, people think Andrew Stanton, Finding Nemo, WALL-E. They forget this is the guy who helped write Toy Story.
Yeah, he's been involved in all three of them.
He has been in with Pixar almost as long as John Lasseter has. And if they fuck over Andrew Stanton over this non-bomb, you will cut deep and have bad blood.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, this definitely was, it's definitely not a failure that you want to string someone up over, and you don't want, you can't point the blame at somebody who's like, he made a mistake in John Carter. Like, John Carter didn't do well. And, but, you know, Pixar and Disney are, you know, pretty much the same thing over the few years. Like, they're very closely related even when they're apart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Toy Story movies are what basically put Pixar on the map. And then, you know, WALL-E is one of the most successful animated films that they've had, and it's critically
Finding
acclaimed.
Nemo, too. Finding Nemo is damn near $1 billion. And it's going to probably hit $1 billion because they're coming out with a 3D version in November, I think.
Exactly. So this guy, his career is fine. Like, his ego is going to be a little damaged. He might not jump right into another live-action movie, but I guarantee you he directs live-action again, and he probably gets whatever project he wants from Disney again. Like, there, you know, he might not be able to get John Carter Part 2, and he might not be able to get $200 million to do a fantasy epic set in space, but they hand him the money to make any animated movie he wants, and they hand him probably $150 million to make any live action movie he wants. I mean,
yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Yep.
So hopefully that answers your question. The only thing I'll say about the George Lucas statement is, first of all, there's no question, regardless of what you think of the prequels, there's no question that those things were fucking money makers. So even though he may have been surrounded by yes men, George Lucas made like close to $2 billion for those movies with an investment of a couple hundred million. So those were huge successes. That's before you even start counting the merchandising. The other thing is the difference between George Lucas in the Star Wars prequels and Andrew Stanton with John Carter is Andrew Stanton was a hired hand, even though he worked at Pixar and everything. He was one of the guys. George Lucas is in control of everything. It wasn't that he was surrounded by yes men. He owns the fucking company, and he owns the fucking franchise. He can do whatever he wants to, and he basically funded them himself.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, they're technically, I think, independent movies.
Yeah, they're the most They are. They're the most expensive independent movies ever made. They're just distributed by 20th Century
Fox. Yeah, so Fox didn't say yes. I mean, Fox said okay. I'm sure I sort of wish Fox could have said no a couple of times, but I'm sure every time they said no, George said, you know, no to you because I'm George Lucas and I'm a quadrillionaire because I screwed you so many years ago and I got all the licensing money from Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude, he doesn't even have to wake up to make money.
No, he doesn't. Well, and what's funny is I actually just was watching. This is getting ahead of ourselves in terms of the DVDs, but I was watching the Blu-ray of Wizards, and Ralph Bakshi was kept telling the story in one of the special features about how he and Lucas were coming at the same time asking for more money. He was asking for more money for Wizards. Lucas was asking for more money for Star Wars, and the head of the studio, Atlanta Jr., was like, no, I'm not giving it to either of them. And Lucas is like, well, I've got nothing left. Because he needed like, Bakshi needed only like 50,000. Mm-hmm. And they're like, take it out of your producer, director credit, which was like $100,000. So he would have lost half his money. And Lucas was like, he needed like $5 million. So it wasn't, he's like, well, shit, I can't cover that. So I'll just renegotiate the back end. And Fox was like, woohoo, we won that one. Wrong.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest business missteps of all time. And you'll never see anyone ever get that deal again because everyone has learned a very expensive lesson over licensing.
Well, but what's interesting about that is this is what's interesting. If you look at like the history of Star Wars on that is Lucas negotiated that back. If he hadn't have negotiated the back end, it would have never have happened. You would not have had the merchandising explosion that you had with Star Wars because Fox had no plans for that. It was Lucas saying, well, this is mine. This is the only way I'm going to make money. Let's do this. And it worked. And the guy has more. He has enough money to wipe his ass with $100 bills. And
he
does.
He can wipe his ass with people. That's how much money he has. This is like grabs it. He just sits on their faces after he's done pooping.
I want to be that rich. Yeah. Like, I need to get me more people. This tonight my wife was saying we're out of toilet paper. I'd like to go to the store and pick up a couple people that we can now wipe our ass.
You just stroll up. You're like, how about you send three of your cashiers home with me? I had Doritos Tacos Locos tonight.
That's right. They're like, what do I have to do? And be like, you'll find out later.
You'll be well compensated and you will never speak of this.
This is like a good enough time to move on to the Fat Guy Five. Before we do, is there anything you want to get off your chest? Anything? I always like to give the guest a chance to complain. You may have some raging that you didn't get to do on Film School Rejects this week.
I think I'm okay. Haven't been out to the movies since 21 Jump Street and John Carter, so I voiced those concerns and I've been reading lately, so I'm not too mad at anything. Mostly graphic novels, some actual words, but mostly pictures. So, you know, I'm at peace with myself right now.
Wow. This is weird.
Well, it is a Tuesday, so I vent really hard over the weekends, and then, like, I'm cool for, like, Monday and Tuesday, and then it starts coming back Wednesday and Thursday, and by Sunday, I'm just insane.
We'll look for your boiling point piece next week. I'm sure it'll be full of rage.
Yeah, I'm due for some F-bombs.
Let's do the Fat Guy Five. I believe we've done this before. I'm too lazy to actually go check the archives, but I'm sure our longtime listeners will let us know if we fuck this up. Anyways, these are five old TV shows that need a movie, which is based on, of course, 21 Jump Street. The first one I want to mention is Different Strokes. And the reason is because almost everybody in it's dead except Conrad Bain. Can you believe if you were watching Different Strokes in the 70s and 80s, did you think the old guy was going to outlast almost everybody?
It's usually stacked against you. Although it might work a little bit like Golden Girls. Like, they did not die in the order you expected.
No.
But
no, Betty White's still the only one kicking.
Yeah. And the one that looked the oldest lasted really long time.
They all did. It was like a sudden wash of dead Golden Girls in the last 5 years.
The Reaper caught up to them. Betty White somehow duck and rolled out of that, but
she did the marine belly crawl under the Grim Reaper's side, just bing. But no, Different Strokes, because the reason I'd really want to see, I just would love to see Hollywood just hugely stick its foot in its mouth. Because for those who don't know, Different Strokes, the setup was there's this really, really wealthy guy played by Conrad Bain, and he had a daughter, and he wanted to do something, give back to the community, so he adopts two kids from Harlem who are basically ready to be street kids, and that's Willis and Arnold. And then it's the whole fish out of water, black kids, white parent, and all these kind of, and open it up for Norman Lear to do all these social issues. I would love to see what absolute mess Hollywood would make of this, because it wouldn't be a white guy adopting two black kids. It would be like Bill Cosby as a wealthy black guy adopting two like trailer trash white kids.
Yeah.
And they'd have a dog.
You gotta have a dog.
And an 80s robot.
The robot from Rocky 3.
or Jinx from Space Camp.
This sounds like a terrible idea.
I would love, this would be a bomb. This would be
a true bomb. It's $120 million movie. It makes $6 million opening weekend.
That would be so awesome. So that's one. The next one is yours. What was the big contribution you had to this list?
I believe I brought up Magnum P.I. as a film, which I'm a huge Magnum P.I. fan. So I say it hesitantly because, like, who knows? They talked about it for a while with, like, Matthew McConaughey, who I think is actually a pretty good choice.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But then they talked to Tom Selleck about it, and Tom Selleck was like, no, I don't think they should make a Magnum P.I. movie, because if you do it, you're going to make fun of it, and I don't want to be a part of it, because a lot of people love that show. And I'm like, I love that show. He's convinced me that maybe they shouldn't. But, you know, if they did it right, find the right guy. I would even watch Magnum P.I. the later years if it were Tom Selleck comes back to Hawaii.
I think that would be cool.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
I don't know who you could get to do. I mean, can anyone pull off a stash the way Magnum P.I. that Tom Selleck can still?
I don't know, because his stash, it doesn't threaten you. It's comforting. Most people, when they put on a mustache, you sort of feel like you're in danger of being raped. But when he turns around and looks at you with that stash, you're like, this man is going to take care of me.
And you just spread your legs and say, let it start.
And then the Santorum comes.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it could make a good movie. I think that and this is where I think 21 Jump Street walked the line, as opposed to something like Dukes of Hazzard didn't, where they take what was ostensibly a serious show that's goofy in its time, but it's played straight, and then they just set it up as a comedy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that Magnum P.I. would have worked. It worked for the Brady Bunch because that was just a fucking ridiculous show in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
But when they did that with Dukes of Hazzard, I was thinking about that today. I'm like, I could see them. I'd love to see a decent Dukes of Hazzard movie.
Done. Yeah, I mean, my first reaction with most movies when I hear our TV shows going to become movies, I think you should go serious with them. Like, when I thought of a G.I. Joe movie, I was like, yeah, it should be like hardcore soldiers and stuff. And you're like, 21 Jump Street, you're like, yeah, gritty underground narco drug trafficking and Magnum P.I. You know, and then, you know, you get what Hollywood is always like, hey, instead of making that, what if we cast Jonah Hill in that? What if we did that? What if we got Johnny Knoxville to show up?
And you're like, hey. Every now and then it works with 21 Jump Street, but you know what would happen if they did a Magnum P.I. movie? It would star Norm Macdonald.
You're giving him too much credit. He couldn't pull that job down. I like Norm Macdonald, but he wouldn't get that job.
That's true. He's not, unless Andrew Stanton was directing.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they would mess up the Magnum P.I. movie if they were trying. You know what? They might do Thomas Lennon from Reno 911. That's how you take this to its comedic heights and ruin
that
it.
I would actually watch that. Yeah, I think. Yeah, Magnum P.I. could make an interesting show. But I'd like to, if they did it, I'd like to see them do it the way they did, like, the A-Team.
Yeah.
Where it was an honest-to-God realistic portrayal. The next one on the list is Space 1999. And I would love to see them do this and actually have it set in 1999. Just because, I would love to see Hollywood just put its foot in its mouth. You know, have it take place in 1999, Clinton's president, and the ship to the moon. Isn't it the ship goes to the moon and it just keeps going or something like that? And there's the internet still like 28.8 modems, and they can't reach the ship. I would love to see Space 1999 and just try to shoehorn that Because how? What are you going to call it? Space 2199?
Yeah, if they took it seriously. I feel like you take the same 21 Jump Street approach to to Space 1999, and you just our Anchorman approach. Like, you throw caution to the wind. You're like, yeah, here we are. It's 1999. Isn't this crazy? Isn't it crazy, the technology we have?
Wait till the year 2000. It's going to be insane.
I hope one day our phones don't have wires.
I wish they have these giant cell phones. This cost me $7,000.
There's only three of them on the planet.
The next one on the list is, and I've been saying they should do this for the longest time. I'd love to see Scarecrow and Mrs. King be made an honest to God series, and they would, and I would cast Bradley Cooper as Scarecrow, and I would cast like Drew Barrymore as Mrs. King. I think that would be a great series.
Yeah, I can't claim too much familiarity with it, but judging from the Wikipedia page, I'd say you're spot on.
Yeah, so there we go. And then the last one, Greatest American Hero. I've been advocating a full movie of this, and there was actually Nathan Fillion wants to do this, and he wants to play the Greatest American Hero. And if this one, they have to do it completely as they did it. They have to do it straight. It can't be a comedy. They have to do it straight. Are you familiar with The Greatest American Hero?
Yep. This one I do know. And this one does seem like a no-brainer. It's like, how they haven't done this.
Yeah.
And I think Nathan Fillion makes the right choice. And, like, you don't have to poke fun at it. But, I mean, the series is a little bit silly, just through the, you know, getting to know your superpowers.
They can't have Nathan Fillion in the white afro wig or anything like that. They got to have him just play it straight.
Yeah.
Play it normal.
I think that's the problem, is a lot of these movies, they don't end up being adaptations of TV series. They end up being parodies of TV series. So if you make a parody of The Greatest American Hero, you end up with a crappy movie. You adapt it and you approach it, you know, smartly, you make something very funny. You could easily make something very funny.
If it's any of these movies starring Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson, probably not a good idea.
I was just thinking that we could also go with like a Simon Pegg in Greatest American Hero. Throw him in there.
Well, he'd be British. He'd have to do an American act because it would be really bad. Greatest American Hero would be like, "Hello, Governor."
Yeah.
That is in my mind how Simon Pegg sounds.
That's true. He can be a supporting role.
But. Right, Governor. Cheerio. I do a terrible British accent. Me and you, accents.
We should do a traveling show where we just wreck accents.
Yeah, we should, like, go to England. Somebody should fund this.
Oi, mates, you want to get a drink?
What's going on? Let's go down to the pub and watch some football, eh?
Yeah, they're like, what year is it?
And just get kicked in the balls everywhere we go.
Yeah, the English love ball kicking.
They do.
Who doesn't?
Fucking British. All right, we better go. When we come back, we'll talk DVDs.
Yay!
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are in our final segment. The middle segment, we actually had a long, drawn-out discussion about John Carter and whether it was or wasn't a bomb, whose fault is it, why it didn't do well, what it means for Disney and Andrew Stanton. It's actually a pretty good discussion, and then surrounded by a whole bunch of profanity and sexual talk. So
that's my favorite kind of talk.
And we had a Fat Guy 5 about movies that we wish, TV shows that we wish would become movies, and why. So you can go back and listen to that if you're hearing us on the radio out there in Wyoming. But other people, you probably already heard that, and we can move on. What do we got coming up here next, Robert?
Well, I believe it's the world-famous DVD Roundup.
See, I actually got a whipping sound. Did you hear that?
This is the first time
in the history of the show, real whipping sound.
Nice.
Which I can thank the Big Bang Theory, because they promoted this. They used a whipping sound in the show, and they had an app for it. So I downloaded the app. So now we have an authentic whipping sound. I don't have to do my Lucasfilm sound effect using just my voice, which isn't really my voice. But anyways, I'm going to let you start, Dare Fury. What do you have in terms of DVDs or Blu-rays that you want to highlight this week?
Well, I believe I mentioned off the air that I wasn't too impressed with the slate this week. I do enjoy The Killing from AMC TV, which is out today.
Season one.
And season two will be coming to AMC on April 1st, I believe, so you still have time to catch up. It's a good show. And then I think also this week the American Pie trilogy has come to Blu-ray. So if you want to see some high-definition dessert intercourse, that's always good. I'm a big Sean William Scott fan, so you know I always have to throw a nod to him.
It's where he got his start.
Yeah. Such a young-faced little cherub.
Yeah. Now, I would say you're right. In, there may not be stuff that jazzes me, but there's a lot of releases that either are on my radar or I think are decent to check out. One of them is Breakout Kings Season 1, which is on DVD. Now, both this and The Killing, I believe, are both on Netflix, too. So you can stream them as well as just buy the DVDs. Breakout Kings is okay. It's by the people who did Prison Break. It's a little bit trite at times, and it overplays the macho testosterone angle. There's also the sci-fi series Neverland, based on Peter Pan. That's out on Blu-ray and DVD. Absentia, which is a horror film by Phase 4. Haven't watched the whole thing yet, but I've heard some really good things about it. The bigger releases are the ones that are The Adventures of Tintin, Steven Spielberg's mocap adventure, which was really kind of charming and wonderful. That's one of those that didn't do well at all domestically, did incredibly well overseas. Definitely worth the money that they put into it. So there, I don't know whether there's going to be a sequel, but it definitely is worthy of it. Wizards, the 35th anniversary Blu-ray. We mentioned this in the middle segment. This is Ralph Bakshi's animated film about a post-apocalyptic world. Then there's a whole bunch of award films like The Descendants and Melancholia and My Week with Marilyn. Those are ones you can catch if you haven't had a chance to see them. And then the sort of like fringe, I guess not doing as well, but sort of more family adventures, you can say, would be The Three Musketeers, which is Paul W.S. Anderson's wackety-schmackety 3D version of the movie, and Happy Feet 2. Did you like Happy Feet 2?
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I did not watch Happy Feet 2. Oh, okay. I don't watch a lot of children's films, despite having the IQ of a third grader.
The maturity level.
A very smart third grader.
Oh, was that another accent? I don't know what that was.
That was just creepy. Hello, ladies.
Yes. Now, the one I'm going to put as the stinker, and you may disagree with me on this, so if you want to, is Young Adult. That's Charlize Theron, and that's written by Diablo Cody, directed by Jason Reitman. I know the point of it is she has no growth and no character development, but I just found it kind of soulless and stupid.
Sometimes movies make the point, they're like, that's the whole point. And I'm like, well, it shouldn't have been made into a movie, because that's not what makes good movies.
Yeah.
You know?
It didn't do very well. It got some award nominations and that sort of thing from the smaller critics groups, but it just didn't click. It didn't have this, it's a huge step down from Up in the Air. Mm. Big step up from Jennifer's Body, though.
Yeah, that was poo-poo.
That was terrible. Review wrap up. We had 21 Jump Street, which we both said, we both gave it what, a kind of rocks kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. It's worth seeing. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, check it out. There's also Casa de mi Padre, which is Will Ferrell in the sort of grindhouse Mexican. Would it be called, because they say blaxploitation, would this be the Mexploitation?
Yeah, I suppose. Flick? I suppose that's the term.
We can call it that. I'm coining that now. Listen, people, unless it's already been used, it's mine. I want royalties. Next week, we have The Hunger Games. I will be seeing that. We will have another special guest who Dare Fury knows, which will be a surprise until it happens.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. So you can get us at fatguysofthemovies.com and check us out. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr. And you can go on Facebook, facebook.com/FGATM. And Fury. Dear Fury, give us your information. You got about 45 seconds.
That's me.
Where do we find you?
You can find me at Film School Rejects, which is filmschoolrejects.com. You can find me at Twitter, /RejectRobert. You can find me at beefitandfurious.com. And I'm sure if you just Googled Robert Fury, you'll find more about me than you wish you knew.
Don't do the image search.
I mean, there's some boobies pop up, and they're not mine. Surprisingly.
Amazing. Is it like somebody has a tattoo? I don't know.
I was interviewing a woman with large breasts, and that's
That helps.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to go. Thank you guys for listening to Fat Guys in the Movies, and we will check you out next week when we talk The Hunger Games.